This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the American Monetary Association's podcast, where we explore how monetary policy impacts the real lives of real people and the action steps necessary to preserve wealth and enhance one's lifestyle.
It's my pleasure to welcome back a returning guest, and that is Daniel Amaduri. He is co-founder of Future Money Trends newsletter and futuremoneytrends.com. With nearly 150,000 subscribers, he's also the best-selling author of Don't Save for Retirement, A Millennial's Guide to Financial Freedom. Daniel, welcome back. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
You're coming to us from my old city I lived in for a year and a half, Las Vegas, today, right?
I sure am. I'm in a Las Vegas hotel. I did not know this, but I'm actually staying at the Delano, which is next to Mandalay, and yesterday was
the anniversary of the shooting.
The anniversary,
yeah.
Yeah,
2-year anniversary. I was there at the Foundation Room, and I actually filmed that shooting, that terrible, horrific event. I never saw anything like that in my life. Now, granted, I saw it from far away, but I still have nightmares about it. It's awful.
It is horrible.
Yeah, it really is. And I tell you, you probably would agree with me on this, although we've never talked about it. There's a lot more to that story than the official version, I guarantee it. I don't know what the story is, but I know it's not the official version. I can tell you that.
I'm with you on everything you just said. I don't know what the truth is, but I sure as hell know that what they're telling us is not the truth.
There is no way this guy, and by the way, this is not the subject of this interview, but there's no way that guy, acting alone with zero motive, did that. That seems a lot more like a terrorist attack, because think about it, it was a Christian concert, okay? You know, that was just totally suppressed, and it was shocking. It took months and months for them to release footage of him moving all of that equipment, all of those guns, all of that ammunition in through the elevators and all of this stuff, and there was hardly any of that footage available. Could have been anything in those cases, right? That story just, I smell a rat everywhere you look in that story.
Well, and there's a lot of eyewitness accounts that saw multiple shooters. They even have the police, like scanners. Some of the police were worried about like a helicopter shooting guns, you know, so who knows what the real story is and why they covered it up and why they don't want the public knowing. Who knows? Maybe it was tied to Al-Qaeda or something.
Well, I would certainly think it was tied to Al-Qaeda or ISIS or something like that, because it makes sense that, number one, they'd attack a Christian group. And from just being there myself, you know, I cannot say this, and I said this on the news. I was interviewed a few times after the event. I'm no expert, okay? That's my first disclaimer. But it did not sound like a single shooter. It did not sound like that to me. At first, I was there with a friend of mine. You know, it sounded like a jackhammer at first. I didn't know what it was, you know. It certainly did not sound like a single shooter. But, you know, again, I'm not an expert. So anyway, let's get on with the subject here. So don't save for retirement. Now, Daniel, isn't that contradicting age-old financial wisdom? You know, save for a rainy day, save for your future, be responsible, delay gratification for something bigger, for a bigger future, for a secure retirement. You're telling people not to save money, really?
Well, it's not to not save money. It's just to not use the current cookie cutter plan of retirement, which has failed. So, you know, this was people think of this as something that's always been, and they just don't even question it. They just start saving for retirement and as if it's going to all work out perfectly. When the proof is out there now, the evidence is out there, it's failed for most people. Vanguard, which has most of these accounts, the median 401k-er that's 65 and up only has about $55,000 in their account.
And that's the median?
That's the median, not average.
That is being, you know, skewed a lot. That's just the middle number. And those are 65-year-olds, and that's not enough money. But boy, it gets a lot worse at the lower end of that spectrum, I'll tell you that.
It sure does. We've all seen the polls out there and stuff where people are asked if they can even afford a $500, expense last minute. It would crush them if it happened. So, I mean, I just look at everything that about retirement from the results of, the baby boomers. Let's face it, they had the best real estate market, best bond market, best stock market. And if it didn't work out for the baby boomers, which are really the first generation to fully embrace this idea, even though you can source pensions back to the Romans, you can source like modern day pensions back to the late 1800s. But, even this artificial number of 65, this was 70 years old in Germany. And then a politician was running against somebody and said, hey, I'll lower it to 65. And it's just fascinating when you really look into retirement and then you kind of just step back and say, well, wait a minute, what do the rich do? What are the wealthy doing? And they're always focusing on preservation, which is that Warren Buffett number one rule. Number two, don't lose money. And they're focusing on income and cash flow, something that you're a huge advocate of and have been teaching thousands of people about, making cash flow, buying things that make you money, that send a check to you. And that is what Don't Save for Retirement is about in the book. It's reconditioning your brain from hoping and praying that your 401k goes up and this idea of retirement all works out, and reconditioning it and focusing on doing the practices of the wealthy, buying income with discipline.
Yeah, well, if you save, the disclaimer for this title, obviously the title's, I'm sure, meant to grab attention. Look at the foundation of an individual and a society and a nation. To build wealth, you must have capital formation. And the core of capital formation is saving, right? It's not spending all of your future, right? But, savers, sadly, and it's so unfairly, they get mistreated. Now we're in an era of financial repression, right? Which I'm sure you've talked about and written about extensively in your work, where the savers, the people who've done the quote unquote right thing, are getting punished because they can't get any yield on their savings without taking, risk that they shouldn't be taking at their age. That's number one. And then number two, inflation will eat them alive. And admittedly, I think inflation is fairly low now when you take out asset inflation. Asset inflation is extremely high. But, if you just go for consumer price inflation, right, it's not that bad. Of course, it's much higher than the official numbers, but it's not terrible. Either way, though, it's just going to drain your wealth. It's a pickpocket, right?
It really is. Inflation is, as you know, is the worst tax of them all. And savers in the book, again, Don't Save for Retirement is just don't save for conventional retirement. Certainly, I'm not saying don't save. I'm a big advocate of saving money. And you can deploy that capital to purchase more income or just to have the money sitting there and to feel great. Sometimes having a nice cash position is the peace of mind people are looking for. So when it comes to don't save for retirement, I hate seeing people, they get tied up in these 401ks or their financial advisor at Primerica, these people who, these people haven't even studied the financial markets longer than somebody has, studied to cut hair.
That's a very good point that you make, by the way. Yes, there's more education involved in being a hairstylist than a financial advisor most of the time. And they're not following their own plan, or if they are, they certainly haven't become wealthy following their plan, right? It's hypocritical. They're
for
recommending
sure
stuff that they're either not doing or haven't become wealthy from.
Well, and that's the biggest profits in retirement are all these vehicles they're creating, whether it's target dated funds, ETFs, indexes, 401ks, and all their baskets of fees. That's where the real money is in retirement. It isn't the actual guy who's saving for retirement or the individual retail investor. It's the retirement industry as a business. That's where the real money is in retirement.
Yeah, well, there's a difference between the business and the doing, right?
Yeah, so my point is, how is your broker investing his money? You look at like anybody who is giving you financial advice, what are they really doing? Are they building a business? Are they telling everybody else to invest and trade stocks, but what they're really doing is actually building a business that teaches people how to do that. So I always try to look at what are the wealthy doing? And time again, it doesn't matter if you're looking at Mark Cuban or Kevin O'Leary or President Trump. If you look at their overall blueprint, it is unlike the middle class. It is unlike the poor. And Robert Kiyosaki talks about this, where the poor and the middle class, they have this urgency to get rich. So they're constantly speculating. And that's what everybody's investing in when they buy a 401k or they just throw money at a stock. They just become speculators. But if you look at what the wealthy are doing, they're not speculating. They're focused on certainty. You know, when Warren Buffett talks about not losing money, he's not saying you can avoid volatility. What he's saying is he's buying things that, look, I'll give you a great example. If you wanted to buy a stock, you could buy Disney stock. Are you going to lose money? No. Is it going to protect you from volatility? No, there's going to be plenty of volatility. So when I look at what the middle class has been completely conditioned into doing, which is speculating, versus the rich, which is cash flow and preservation, that's what I was really trying to teach people in Don't Save for Retirement. And by the way, the book starts out with my wife and I in a bankruptcy attorney's office. We've blown ourselves up in 2008. So this isn't like some story where I had crazy success. The first half of the book is how my wife and I we did crazy things. We cut our budget. We did things that are considered fairly extreme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it reminds me of the famous story from A Random Walk Down Wall Street where, you know, everybody's looking for the good deals and the market is efficient. And I mean, it's not perfectly efficient. Nothing is, but it's just buy the index, right? That's how you'll reduce your volatility and create wealth over the time. But better yet, get into alternative investments like my favorite, income property. But, you know, the story of the financial advisor, the stockbroker, who takes his buddy down to the marina and says, hey, look at my beautiful new yacht. And that one over there is my friend's yacht, and that's my other friend's yacht. And, you know, these are all people I work with, or my buddies that work at other firms, brokerage firms. And then his friend that he's showing off to says, well, where are all the clients' yachts? You know, it's all the people, the insiders. It's an insider's game. And with alternative investments, like income property, you are the insider. We can all be insiders because it's a direct investment and we're not letting some big brokerage firm skim all the money off the top, right? And not just brokerage firm, but the CEOs, the fund managers, the board of directors, you know, all the insiders. There's so many of them in so many directions, right? But that's really what it's all about. I'm looking at your table of contents. And I want you to talk a little bit about chapter two, if you would. You know, what did we inherit? And when you look at the different demographic cohorts, each of them kind of inherited a different world, right?
Sure.
So take whichever cohort you want. I mean, I know the book is for millennials, but could be, you know, really for anybody in many ways.
You know, my message specifically to millennials, which I'm just barely made it in, I'm one of the first ones, but it is that this acceptance that somehow the millennials have it harder, somehow that they're not going to ever make as much money or live the lives and be happy like their parents were or their grandparents. I think it's ridiculous. And I think millennials should embrace the freelance economy, embrace the mobility that all this technology has given us. You can start a business for $10 on GoDaddy.
A lot of them are doing that. I mean, don't you think that's pretty widely accepted in the millennial generation?
It's accepted in the millennial generation. However, they keep comparing their lives to what the baby boomers had, but they're only comparing the negative. They're not truly appreciating all the great things that we have. They're just using them and then complaining that they don't have a pension and they don't have the 30-year career. And when they graduate college, they can't find a job. But in the meantime, you're right. A lot of millennials already have embraced that there is this whole new economy that's way better, that has people surfing during the day, jumping in their car, Ubering people around for 3 hours, maybe having a night gig or doing freelance work from home. So a lot of the millennials are trying to duplicate what the baby boomers had, and it's not a goal worth pursuing if they would just open their eyes in some cases and truly see that, hey, forget about trying to have this 9-to-5 job. Why are you chasing this 9-to-5 gig? That's over. That's in the past. You don't have to be one company's employee for 30 years. You can have 4 or 5 clients as a freelancer. So that's really what I was kind of trying to, my message to millennials in this book was that, hey, forget about all this nonsense, how this generation has it so tough and they're living in their parents' basements. Like, really embrace what you have in front of you, because we have a very good economy and a lot of opportunities to become entrepreneurs. It's better than ever.
To do that, you've got to be disciplined. You've got to work hard. You've got to keep your promises. And that shouldn't be considered difficult, but it is for a lot of people, sadly. So you talk about that in you know, chapter 7 and 8, too. But what about investing beyond Wall Street?
Well, I would say what you're teaching people on the income properties is that is always kind of my first place I would tell people to go. The first thing you need to do is focus on trying to buy a rental property. And if you're in California or New York, this is the perfect place for you to be, because you have all sorts of connections to buy properties out of state where they still cash flow. They're great assets. They're in great states, great country, great investments. And that's kind of the first stop I tell people. Go find a single family home, because that will help you understand business as well. Because you can be a landlord and you can treat it like a slumlord, or you can treat it like the Marriott. So the entire experience, and I do all this stuff with my children as well, when we buy a home, you know, it is running a business. So first of all, it's a great learning experience, and it will actually provide you some real cash flow. You know, an ETF, as you know, anything on Wall Street, heck, if it's in a 401k, you can't even get it out, or you have a 10% penalty. All these vehicles, they're not really geared towards making you money every month. Buying a single family home, or even a private REIT, or you know, investing in mortgage notes, there's so many different ways for cash flow outside of Wall Street. But the great thing is that's actually going to be a check that comes to your mailbox, or like with my property managers, it gets direct deposit in my account. That's real money. It's not money that's fugazi money that I can use when I'm 65 years old or 7 years old. It's money that I can actually use to support my lifestyle now. Or if I'm smart and I'm young, grab that money and go buy some more houses and some more income.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, good stuff. What else do you want people to know? You know, you really have a lot of thoughts about the economy, and I just wanted to talk maybe before we close more generally, if we could, just thoughts about the economy, where things are going, and, you know, feel free to relate that to any of the, you know, retirement issues and financial planning issues.
First, for your listeners, if they go to futuremoneytrends.com/save, they can read the introductory of the book and the first chapter free. And of course, there is a link to Amazon if they'd like to continue. And I would love for them to check that out. If they ever reach out to me, I'm always happy to reply to people. I love going over deals, just like I'm sure you do. But, you know, on the general economy, I'd say this, and this is probably the biggest thing on everybody's mind, is there going to be a stock market crash or a recession? And you cannot make these predictions and time these things. But one thing I can say is I've never read in history or experienced in my own life where a stock market crash happens when everybody's telling you a stock market crash is going to happen, and when everybody is excited about it, the potential of a stock market crash and a recession. And, you know, I was just on marketwatch.com before that we did this interview, and it's just like, what's worse, negative yields or the other option investors had was a 50% stock market crash? I'm like, really? There's an assumption. And anytime you see that, the opposite's going to happen. And I would bet, because of the inverted yield curve and negative rates, I would bet that it's essentially boom time for the next year. I suspect markets to reach crazy levels, that the Dow over 30,000, maybe 35,000, the exact opposite of what everybody's expecting as far as a recession and stock market crash.
Hasn't this market, isn't it a little long in the tooth by now? I mean, it's been going for a while, and I'm sure it got extended by Trump's election, but, you know, it can't go forever.
They can't, but, you know, the bond market is in its 38th year. So the stock market and the real estate market's only in its 10th. Is it a new bull market or is it an old bull market? It's hard to say. I mean, the bond market, it's been going since 81. So it's hard to say if it's long in the tooth. I do know this, that, you know, I was looking at some of these inverted yield curve moments in time, and it is true that the last four or five have had a recession after, but there have been many more. And there's actually a time period between 1879 and 1929, 50 years, we had an inverted yield curve on average, 70% of the time. So because of the demand for capital and what's going on in the global economy with all the central banks easing, I think it's very possible that we actually see a fairly good environment for the next at least 12 months.
Yeah, very interesting. So past the election.
Yeah, I think he's going to be okay for the economy. And I'm not saying Trump's going to get elected or not elected, but I don't think he's going to be dealing with a recession.
Right. Well, yeah. Wow. So it'll the boom times will continue past the election. That was my question mark.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see which way it goes. Because I think this trade war with China will most likely be settled up here in the next 6 months. A lot of people think it'll go past the election, but I have this weird feeling that China actually likes Trump because he's such a disruptor. And for better or for worse, and a lot of people, Trump people won't like hearing this, but I think China sees this as an opportunity for them to make new friendships and new allies with certainly some of the people that the United States is upsetting and disrupting in a lot of old relationships. So I think as a disruptor, you know, it's like anything else, you know, China's going to adapt to whatever U.S. policy is and use it as their own tool. And I think with Trump, he's a great disruptor. I think he's doing a lot of good. But at the same point in time, I think for them, it might be an opportunity to make some new friends as the U.S. leaves some new friends.
China's already the number one trader with North Korea. So, and they're certainly not our friend or, you know, I don't know. I thought they were going in that direction for a while, but apparently not. No. Well, we shall see. Well, Daniel, thanks for joining us today. I believe you already gave out your website. So we appreciate that, and good luck with the book. It's an important message that especially millennials need to hear. So good luck.
Thanks so much, Jason.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.